You're listening to the Represented Podcast Network, an East Coast-based network whose goal is to support, promote, engage, and inspire the arts community by igniting the ghost light that shines on the stages of the up-and-coming, the unsung heroes, the brilliant writers, and the dynamic designers. Stay tuned. Rep Radio is on the air.
Hey guys, this is Brock Vickers with Acting Out, and today I have with me
Liz Filios.
All right, Liz, and so we're going to start off with the very basic stuff. Tell me a little bit about yourself, and tell me also why I'm interviewing you today.
Okay, well, I'm an actress and teaching artist and theater maker. I'm based in Philadelphia, from Michigan originally, and I'm here today because I'm one of the five finalists for the F. Otto Haas Award.
Okay, so we're going to rewind. My first question is, being from Michigan, does that by default make you a Wolverine fan?
Actually, it does.
Okay.
Not necessarily by default,
okay.
But I went there to school. My sister went to Michigan State, however, so we have the in-house rivalry.
So it's Sparty versus...
Exactly, versus... Lincoln.
Have you guys played yet? Or do you play every year?
No, I don't think that we have played this year yet. But it's always a big, big deal in the house.
I imagine. Like, they... I'm from, you know, the South, so sports are like, woo! But, yeah, they have all the license plates of, like, house divided, Georgia Tech versus Georgia, or,
yep.
Like, all those kind
so
of
you
things.
So you know
yeah.
Exactly what that's about.
All right, well, then let's talk about a little bit about that. Like, I mean, we can reel back a little bit, but what got you started? We'll start way back and slowly work our way up to the hot stuff.
Okay. I mean, gosh, that goes a long way back.
Yeah.
I guess when I was a kid, I started taking ballet first.
Okay.
And I was a kind of an independent thinker, I guess, because my mom pulled me out after a few lessons. Apparently, I tried to take over the class.
Okay.
And tell everybody to go in the opposite direction.
All the directors were actually just listening right now.
Yeah, make note. No, I think that she wanted us to walk like ducks in a row.
Yeah.
And when she said ducks, I thought, oh, well, then there should be squawking and
yeah.
flapping. So.
An actress boy.
So, of course, my mother was humiliated and pulled
It'd
me out.
It'd be really good, like, children's book, actually. You know, it's like, an actress born, and then, like, the whole scenario plays out as a duck, and, like, one parent's like,
right, exactly. And then after that, I started piano lessons.
Okay.
And then I got cast in a school play, and I had to miss my lesson 1 week, and I was like, this is fantastic, I don't have to go to piano.
What was the play? Because everyone typically remembers what that first one was.
You know, it was just a play about the planets.
Okay.
It was, you know, I don't even remember the name, but...
What did you play? Were you a planet?
I got to be the sun, I think that was...
I'm sure that had nothing to do with the red hair at all.
Probably.
Nothing whatsoever.
Probably. I remember my best friend got to play the Earth, and she orbited around me. About all I remember.
Well, it's good to hear that they were actually factually correct on some issues. I love going back and like looking at like children's theater stuff or whatever you worked on. Like you start seeing facts that like, haven't been updated in like 30 years, and you're like,
it's not quite.
Right. You guys haven't looked at that, have
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. There's a memo about Pluto.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I did this little play and.
Please.
Coffee, everyone.
Yes.
It's crucial.
Well, it's I think we were committing like a theater sin of like actually doing something before 5.
Yeah.
So this is this is a first. I don't think I've interviewed anyone this early.
Oh,
so,
well,
but I'm okay with it.
It'll be raw and real.
I'm gonna go through a pot of coffee during this process,
fair
but
enough.
It's okay.
Fair enough.
All right, so you got to play the Earth.
I got to be in this play and skipped piano lessons, and I thought that was fantastic because my piano teacher was super strict.
Okay.
So yeah, at first it was just a way to get out of something else, but then it started to become, you know, I started to realize that the people, the kind of people who did theater were really wonderful, and I so had that, a family there.
Is that what struck you then? It was like almost the family nature of the people more than the...
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was a kid ending a production of Oklahoma and just crying at the end. And then I would do summer camps and... you know, I went to Interlochen, which is this beautiful place up in northern Michigan. It's all cabins in the woods, and it's an arts academy. And then in the summertime, you know, kids from public school can go and study there for a couple weeks.
Okay.
So I did that, and just kind of, like, knew that this is what I wanted to do.
Do you still have that? Is it still, like, when you work on a project that you enjoy the people you end up working with as much, if not more?
Oh, no, I hate them now.
Oh, yeah? Well, I've worked with some assholes, so...
No, of course. And, you know, I think that part of what drew me from Michigan to Philadelphia and kept me here was that very same thing, you know? Just that the nature of this community and the amazing people in it.
All right. Then what was the next step after that? I mean, you went to these art camps or whatever. I mean, did you go to college? Did you go to a performing arts school? Was it just like you started?
I went to public high school. Had a really amazing teacher, Gloria Logan, who inspired me and pushed me.
Okay.
And then I majored in musical theater in college. I went to the University of Michigan, and actually the teacher of that summer program at Interlochen was the head of this department. And I remember that he sat us all down during that summer program, and he talked a little bit about just his philosophies on art and creativity and collaboration and...
breakfast!
He didn't talk about food. There's food here now.
Yes, there is.
It looks amazing.
Are you good?
Good.
I'm fine.
Good.
Yeah.
We're good.
Also, this is the moment. I've already told her it was going to happen. We're eating breakfast at a place called Ann's Pants, and this is my name drop before we get back to the story. You need to go listen to Dr. Looney's Remedies. And they talk about you've got ants in your pants. And if you remember that, it comes from a Goofy movie. So bam, there was my factor.
Bam, there it is.
Enjoy that little nugget, because I'm going to listen to it right when this is over.
Got it stuck in my head already.
Yeah.
So yeah, one of the things that... His name is Brent Wagner. He's a really brilliant man, director, teacher, and artist. And he said that... one thing that frustrates him, especially about young people in the performing arts, is that they get super competitive and they're constantly comparing themselves. I mean, teenagers sort of do that anyway, but it's somehow heightened when you want to be a performer. And he said that we should all try and imagine that we're like racehorses, and horses in races wear blinders, you know, these little black things that go on the sides of their face, so they can't see side to side, they can only see straight ahead. And it just made sense to me that I should always just look forward and compare myself to myself and try not to worry about that competitive aspect of the business. I mean, that's in a perfect world. Of course, we all have those moments, but it made sense to me. I liked what he was saying, and I decided that I wanted to study at a place where this kind of professor taught. And so I applied and got into Michigan and studied there. It was a fantastic program. And then after that, this is my life story, everyone.
Yeah. Oh, no, hey, that's why we're here, so.
So sometime around my junior year, I started to get a little restless. I loved musicals, but I started to think, like, there's probably more to life than musical theater. You know, I feel like I'm not exercising.
This big existential moment. There's got to be more to life than musical theater.
Right? There are parts of my brain that I used. And
that'd be like a great moment in like the Book of Mormon or something. Like, that's a perfect like self-aware moment.
Yeah, just a little ding, yeah. The light bulb goes off. I was at this great liberal arts college, so I was taking English and history and science and all these other classes, but I wanted to see what else was out there. And I was very, very fortunate that I was able to apply to the study abroad program. The first semester of my senior year, I took off, and I went to this program called Semester at Sea, which is like a floating university. Some people are like, is that the one on Real World? And the answer is yes. They did do a Real World on the boat. It wasn't like that, necessarily. I mean, it wasn't like that.
Sure it
was. It was amazing. It was this just floating academic institution, and we, in 3 months, we circumnavigated the globe. We started out in Vancouver, and we went through Japan, China, Vietnam, Thailand, and we went all through Asia, and then we went to India, and then Africa, and then cut across to South America. So it was a real life-changing experience to see a lot of these places, and we were doing field studies in each of the port cities, and we had professors from all of these countries leading us. So I realized that there was, in fact, a lot more to life than musical theater.
There was floating universities.
There was, you know, there was cross-cultural psychology, and there was international urbanization, and there was history, and there was religion, and there was politics, and there was the global economy, and there was a lot, and it sort of, like, blew my mind. And one of the places that we went that really stuck with me was Cape Town, South Africa.
And why did it stick with you?
Well, I think that, first of all, it's just one of the most naturally stunning places I think I've ever seen. It's, you know, it's right on the water, and there's a mountain that's within walking distance to the shore called Table Mountain, and when the air cools at night, it gathers, and then there's a beautiful cloud that goes down the mountainside, and it's a really fascinating place, you know. Nelson Mandela was imprisoned there in Robben Island, just off the coast, and so a lot of the civil rights struggle in South Africa was based there. And you know, apartheid was lifted in the 90s, but there's still a remnant of that. Kind of in a bizarre way, reminded me of Detroit and home.
Okay.
You know, just that there were tensions between races and classes. It's great. And yet there were people that were working hard to overcome that.
Yeah.
And some of those people that I met were musicians. They were members of the Cape Town Opera Voice of a Nation Choir.
Yep.
And they came together and performed, and I got to see them. I had the opportunity to hear them while I was there. And they sang some traditional African hymn, and then they sang an excerpt from Handel's Messiah, the Hallelujah chorus. And it just kind of shook the rafters, and it felt like kind of like standing in front of a supernova. Like, the sound was just so powerful, and the voices were so raw, and most of their singers had never seen the inside of a conservatory. They weren't trained, but they had this power and this honesty in their voices, and most of them were getting shipped in from the townships. Like, they lived out in this area in Cape Town called the townships, where a lot of the people who were originally living there got pushed back when Dutch and English settlers came there. So when it was colonized, they were sort of marginalized into these small areas where they still live. And these areas are quite poor, and there's an amazing amount of talent and heart and great spirit there. So the Cape Town Opera, which, you know, is run by a British man.
Yeah.
Smart enough to realize that he had a lot of natural resources there in his own community, and instead of importing opera singers from Paris or from Rome or, you know, from some of these other places, he started training and paying to, like, just shuttle people from the townships in and out of downtown. And so that's how this ensemble was created. I'm really rambling a lot.
No, you're good. You're fine. It's perfectly fine.
It was such a moment in my life. And I don't know if you've ever heard music and cried. It's only happened a couple of times to me in my entire life, but that was one of those moments. So I just decided if there was music like that being made in the world, I needed to be a part of it. I needed to be there. So anyway, after the semester at SEED program was over, I went back and finished up my senior year, and I immediately arranged to go back to Cape Town and do an apprenticeship there with the Cape Town Opera. So that's what I did. I bounced around a little while, and I auditioned for something in Philly to fill the interim between my graduation date and when I went to Cape Town. I had that summer, and I had nothing to do, and I saw this really cool project that was happening in Philadelphia, and it was a collaboration between an opera company in Philly and one in Italy, and they were doing a new adaptation of Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale. So I thought, oh, Shakespeare Opera in Italy, this sounds amazing. So I called and asked if I could audition, and they said no. They had had an application and a deadline that I had missed, and you had to send in a demo, and I hadn't done any of that. And while I'm on the phone with them, I said, I understand, but I want to audition anyway. They're like, well, where are you coming from? I said, Detroit. And they said, that's so crazy, we'll let you do it. So I got on a plane and I flew to Philadelphia. I auditioned and I got the role. And so that's what I did. I came to Philly, and then I went to Italy that summer. And then from there, I went directly to Cape Town. And then when my apprenticeship was over, I came back to Philly because I really enjoyed the time that I had worked here that previous summer, and was really impressed by the people and the level of talent and yet humility and kindness. So this sort of became my home base, and I bounced back and forth for a while, but I kept coming back to Philly, and now it's home. There you have it. Under 5 minutes, yeah. Life story.
Bam. So how long has it been home? I mean, or at least home base, or I mean, wrapping it all together, like how long have you been, like, either using it as home base, or like officially been like, no, it's home now.
I think that home base, it's been for about, 8 years now, and home, I would say about 5.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, changing directions a little bit. So if you've been bouncing around, like, so in all that time. What has been one of your favorite things? Like, you talked about the project working in Italy that brought you here, and then all that. But what has been one of your favorite things you definitely think to work on? For all the directors that you've previously worked with and actors, you're going to be like, this is the moment now.
This is the moment.
Yeah.
I think that I would have to say it was Candide at the Arden.
Okay.
It was a really formative experience for me. It was my first major role at an Equity Theater in town, and it's Bernstein, so it's some of the most incredible music ever written, and I'm biased, of course, but.
So do you mostly stick to musicals? I mean, do you prefer to, like, stay in the musical theater world? Do you find yourself venturing out?
I definitely do, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny because, actually, for the Haas process, they had us create a chronology of all of our work. You know, and you have a resume with, like, highlights, but I had never sat down and written out every single thing I'd done. And I noticed that there was this odd pattern where it started out with very traditional, musicals, and then it started to branch into drama and comedy, and then it started to branch into devised theater and puppetry and more abstract work. And I think one of the big lessons that I've learned in trying to make a career out of the arts is just that the more you can diversify, the better. It pays to be versatile, and it also helps to nourish you as an artist, so you don't have one of those existential moments again.
There's more to life. There is more to life than Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Right, but Candide was the exception because it's kind of one of the ultimate plays in that genre, because it's just so huge, it's so epic in size and scope, and the music is so challenging, and they gather together this incredible team of people. And I had some of the best mentors in Philly as my colleagues.
Okay.
So, and I got to sing really high and swing on a swing.
The image of Moulin Rouge just came into my head.
Diamonds
Are a Girl from Girl's Best Friend, the big swing. Although I don't think she's, I have no idea what note she hits. I'm about as illiterate. Save the coffee.
Don't worry, everyone.
Yeah, the coffee is safe. There was no spilled coffee. It's funny. Yeah. I would say the metaphor, but not the metaphor, but the saying changes when you're a child. There's no use crying over spilled milk. Adult, there's no use crying over spilled coffee. Unless it's after 5 p.m., then there's no use crying over spilled alcohol.
There you go.
Okay, well, staying in that same little, I guess, ballpark area, like, and I'm gonna start. It's a two-part question, so we'll start with what is, and you don't necessarily have to work on it, but what is a play or musical that you absolutely despise? Like, it's not the worst, it could be the worst, you think it's terrible, but you're just like, man, I can't stand that play.
There's gotta be
one that rubbed you, that you were just like, trying to think of the one that, like, how I would answer the question, but like...
Oh, I'm kind of interested. Maybe
I'm trying to think, yeah, of a... The one that comes to mind,
yeah,
and I don't know, and you being a musical theater artist, like, but I cannot stand South Pacific. Like, I cannot stand it. I have seen it twice, neither of which I wanted to be at. One was a college production, and then the other one was a professional production, because like the second time somebody was like, well, you have to see a professional production up and up, they're like, you'll understand it so much more. I'm like, nope, but please.
So, you know what's weird is
you don't like South Pacific either. See, there we go.
I kind of love South Pacific. Like, I was raised on that old stuff, so it has a place in my heart. But another thing that I did grow up loving that I'm really ashamed to admit now is a lot of Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff.
Why are you ashamed to admit the Andrew?
Well, first of all, because it's kind of bad.
Okay.
It's kind of awful. It's like. It's about as mainstream and trite as you can get.
So just because this analogy is in my head, so are you would and I'm stealing this from someone. I'm stealing this from Stephen King because it's how he talks about himself. And I don't like Stephen King either. But so you're Andrew Lloyd Webber would be the musical theater equivalent of a Big Mac and fries.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that, well, I hopefully the listeners will agree with us.
Okay.
I think that is pretty accurate. And it's sad because, like, when I was a kid, I loved McDonald's, right? You do. You get excited about Happy Meals when you're a kid.
I still get excited about Happy Meals.
And then you kind of start to learn more about food.
Yeah.
And you realize that you were
Maybe,
consuming.
Yeah. Absolute garbage.
Yeah. So,
but,
yeah.
But every now and then you still find yourself seeing some Andrew Lloyd Webber in the shower.
I mean... I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. There are times when you have a Big Mac attack,
yep,
and it's just
you have to feel that. Now, is there anyone in particular that you like? That maybe leads the way? Like when you do hear it, you cringe, or like, I don't know, if you're sitting on the other side of the audition, you know, table, like you're casting something,
oh,
where you're
gosh.
Like, no, don't sing that song. Don't sing that song.
Yeah. I think that it has to be Memory from Cats.
Okay.
There it is. That's the song I would not want to hear at an audition.
I worked with somebody recently who was like so excited to be auditioning for Cats.
Oh, no.
Yeah. All right. So then going, once I said, this is a two-part question. Then what is something that you really love? Like a play, maybe you haven't even worked on yet, but a play that, like, if or a musical that... If the opportunity presented itself, you would like jump on a heart because it's like we absolutely love it.
West Side Story.
Okay.
Back to Bernstein. It's funny because I sort of always lamented that I would probably never get cast in that show. You know, the two main female roles are Latina,
mm-hmm.
and they're amazing roles. But I will. I could probably never convincingly play either of them, even though I would love to.
I don't know, do they do a lot of colorblind musical casting? I have no idea.
Not reverse.
No?
Not really, when it comes to... I mean, the fact that they're Puerto Rican is kind of important to the story.
It really is. I mean...
So, although...
I don't know if... I don't think... I just don't see... Yeah, I guess musicals giving the rights to someone going, so here's my vision. I'm going to completely reverse the casting. This is how I see the book.
Although, yeah, I'm doing a show right now with Kim Carson, and she and I just love her. We did a concert once where it was just all, you know, female duets and solos, and we're like, oh my gosh, we have to do West Side Story. And you know, we're just two white girls going, a boy like that to kill your brother. Because we just had to do it once in our lives.
Gotcha. Well, then what is it?
This podcast is part of the Rep Radio Podcast Network, powered by volunteer support, listeners like you, and fiscally sponsored by Fractured Atlas. You can find us online at repradio.org, also on Twitter, Facebook, and now the Stitcher Radio app on your mobile device. Like us, link us, help us grow. You're on the air with Rep Radio. Now back to the show.
Oh, then what is it? What are you working on right now?
We're doing Cinderella out at People's Light and Theater Company.
Okay.
Yeah, panto. It's very silly. It's a lot of fun. Well, play squirrel.
Okay, well, since it hasn't come up yet, I'll talk a little bit about that, like with your experience with children's theater, with doing puppetry and things like that, because I don't know if it's the big elephant in the room. I really don't know. But like, talk a bit about the different experiences that you've had with children's theater.
I think like the best children's theater that I've ever done is no different from adult theater.
Okay.
That's the best way that I can sum that up.
All right. Well, what about Chica?
Oh, then there's Chica. Okay. It's children's television. Yes.
Okay. Different.
That's a little bit different. That's a horse of a different color. There's this television program called The Sunny Side Up Show, mm-hmm. and it's on a preschool TV network called PBS Kids Sprout.
Yeah.
And I did that for about a year and a half. I worked on that show. And they have a very specific aesthetic, mm-hmm. and I learned a lot. When I first went to my audition, it was me and the puppeteer and the puppet, Chica. She's a chicken and she squeaks. That's the only way
that is her communication.
She talks is by squeaking. And I got into the studio and started playing around with this puppet and talking to her. And was like, hey. She was like, squeak. And I was like, how's it going? She was like, squeak. And I just started engaging this puppet in a conversation. Yeah. And they had to like sort of stop us. They were like, all right, we need to start the audition now. Can you stop talking
playing with the
puppet? To the chicken, please? Yeah. And I remember I called my mom afterwards. And she's like, so how did it go? Because it was my first, television gig. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think it went well. I think I speak chicken. No, like I understood her.
Yeah.
And we were just having a conversation, and it was crazy.
You had a Dory. Yeah, you had a Dory moment.
Yes.
I speak well.
Yes, it was exactly.
I speak
like
chicken.
That. So it was great because we had an opportunity to be writers as well as performers on the show. So you would prep for a week and you would watch all of the content that the kids would be watching, and then you would write curriculum that sort of connected those different shows, Sesame Street and, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine, and just create an educational through line for the day, which was unique and challenging work. And then when you were finished, you would have a framework,
mm-hmm.
and then you go in the following week and you'd be live on air and you sort of improvise within that framework. It was terrifying. I mean, improvising on live television is scary. And
especially like, one of my favorite things of performing for kids ever is there's two brains that are constantly working with you. You have like the improv brain of a child, and you're like going and you're like saying all these great things, and then like, but then on the other side of it is there's like that Robin Williams moment of like, I really want to say this bad joke. I really want to say this bad joke. But
sometimes
they're constantly at odds, because every now and then you're like, I can get away with it right now. Nobody gets it. You're like, that's good.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, it was an interstitial, which means that it would play for short links, like 3 or 4 minutes, and then we'd be off air for another 3 or 4 minutes, and then we'd be back on air. So between times on air, that's when we could get out our dirty jokes. And we had a code word, and the code word was blue skies.
Yeah.
If there were kids that were in the studio that day, or if we were, you know, about to go live on air, somebody would be like, blue skies. And then you knew that you had to clean it up. but yes, I think that you have to do that in children's art, or else you go a little crazy.
All right, so juxtaposing that a little bit, because something I have seen you in is the Bearded Ladies. So talk a little bit about your experiences with the Bearded Ladies. I saw you guys do the, I don't remember the specific name of it, but it was the Southern Cabaret, the one during the PIFA Festival.
Yes, a Civil War cabaret.
Okay, yes, Civil War. So, which also had a collection of like half of my playlist that I have, so I was like, I was in. Yes!
Yeah.
Tom Waits, yes!
Yes, there are like literally dozens of songs in that story, because we were trying to trace the genealogy of music, you know, back to North versus South, and see how those tensions, how the war is still being played out culturally in some ways. So the Bearded Ladies is this experimental cabaret troupe, and we founded the company in 2010, and it's not really dissimilar to children's theater in some ways, because there's a lot of, you have to play.
Yeah.
You have to be incredibly present. You're interacting with your audience, and you have to be on your toes to receive whatever they give you. And there are free drinks involved, so people are a little more vocal and interactive than they
don't really find
be.
That very often with children's I don't know why.
Right, but in children's theater, kids are very vocal, and if you suck, they'll let you know right away, right? So
theater audiences are just kids. Put a couple of drinks in the bag, please.
Yeah, either that, or they just get really happy and love everything you do, and everything's hilarious. So,
or they attempt to become part of the shows. I am. Thank you.
We work as a group to write our own pieces, and we start out with music and. And then we kind of build around that. Like, we wanted to do a James Bond cabaret.
Yeah.
So we listened to all of the songs from all of the James Bond movies, and we watched a bunch of Bond movies. And then we chose our favorites, and we arranged them, and we lifted scenes from movies, and then we transcribed them and set them to music, and so they became like Bond opera, Bond recitative. And it was totally bizarre and fun.
I'm sure that one is coming very, very soon. With Evil Dead the musical and American Psycho the musical, Bond the musical has got to be on its way somewhere.
It's got to be. It's only a matter of time.
Okay, well, I mean, since you have, like, I mean, with those two things, like, you know, you worked with Chica for a little bit, and then you've done some of the Bearded Lady stuff, and you talked a little bit about this earlier. Like, what do you find now that does interest you, that you said you see after, like, a period of time, like, when you had to look at your resume for Haas, that you saw it starting to kind of spread out from different directions? So what do you find stuff that really does? I mean, right now, like, what interests you right now? If we were talking about possibly putting on a show, the magic word would be...
Crossover.
All right, explain.
The magic word would be crossover, because I'm interested in creating sort of hybrid arts collaborations with artists from different disciplines. Right now, the Bearded Ladies are in the process of creating our first... cabaret opera with Opera Philadelphia, and it's going to be all about Andy Warhol, and you know, pop art was his thing, so we're talking a lot about taking that quite literally and creating these pop-up pieces, talking to artists, visual artists who create gigantic pop-up sets, and that just, I mean, that project really excites me, because there's a lot of cross-pollination of arts involved, and also because there's a lot of dramaturgy involved, and I think that, as nerdy as it sounds, that's one thing that really excites me, is doing a project where I have to do a lot of research and really just expand my knowledge about a certain field. Like when we did the Civil War cabaret, I realized that there's a lot, I slept through American history, you know, and... Yeah.
It also gets a lot more complicated when you realize...
It gets more complicated when you're learning about it as an adult, as opposed to the simple...
A lot of things. And, you know, it's really... not to get off on a tangent, but it is kind of really sad, like, whenever you realize some of the things that you learned just so that you could swallow it in school.
Just so you could
are not the,
process
the, yeah,
it.
Are not the, it's not exactly what happened. You
yeah.
know, like, Kublai Khan, or no, we're not Kublai, you know, Genghis Khan was not just this terrible Mongol who was out just killing everybody. Like, there's more to it than that.
Right, and Christopher Columbus was not a saint.
No, he was definitely not.
No.
Poor fellow.
So,
yeah, but so crossover, all right.
Crossover, and relearning, revisiting history, digging through things, re-examining them,
mm-hmm.
and, kind of educating while you entertain, mm-hmm. I guess.
Okay.
I like things that are smart and challenging and complex and fun at the same time. If we can make audiences, you know, learn or feel, but not really know that they're learning, just have a great experience, then I think that's, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fine. We'll get specific with it. Like, what is something that you found that about the characters that you play that you end up liking? Like, I mean, it's like, you know, everyone ends up maybe finding something about a character, even if it's completely contrasting of who they are. Like, what is something that maybe you've seen over your period of time of, like, maybe recurring things of, like, you always like finding this in a character, or like whenever you're getting ready to perform, it's all, you always like having holding on to like this one thought. Like, what is it that you like to find as far as, like, from your perspective of, like, the things you find in characters? What's your favorite things to look for whenever you're working on a part and then, like, using that?
Well, I had the opportunity to do some work with some folks from Pig Iron and do some workshops with them, and so they're, you know, they're really into physical approaches to theater and collaboration. And
we'll pause real quick, because it's just because, like, right now we're playing Lou Reed, actually just came on in the background, so rest in peace. But
oh.
I was like, oh,
Lou.
Yeah, keep going.
I really love to find some of that outside in stuff that you can discover through viewpoints exercises or Laban work. I love to find the breath of the character. I love to find the rhythm and the pace and the tempo and where that changes. I like to find their gaze and, you know, their physicality, and that, I think, lets me in a really immediate way. Like this summer I did Noises Off, and while we were blocking the first act, I was kind of struggling to figure out who this woman was that I was playing, and then we got into the second act, and I was just running everywhere. I was the character who was trying to solve all of the other
problems. Okay.
And they started calling me Lola. Like, we would start, and they'd be like, run, Lola, run, and I would just go, you know? And something about zooming up and down staircases in high heels at breakneck speed, finally something clicked in, and I was like, this is me, this is what I do, I rescue people. And then suddenly the characters started to come together out of that. So, I think those are some of the things that I look for.
Do you have a character that you really enjoy playing? I mean, do you love being, I don't know, the motherly character, or you find, like, you really like sinking your teeth into a villain, or, like, anything like that? Like, or being the fun, like, I mean, do you have, like, ones? Because, you know.
Yes.
Not, okay, you do. What is it?
Yes. I love being mean on stage.
You love being mean?
I never get to do it. I think it's from, like, having been stuck in children's TV land for so long, and where everything has to be sweet and saccharine.
Yeah.
I got to create this character named Ufa for a German expressionist cabaret, and she's really tough, and she's really jagged, and we have a pre-show before each of the cabarets where you can come and interact with the audience, and it was so fun to see my friends there and to come up and just totally harass them and be completely mean to them, and they would just crack up because it was kind of out of character for me. But I like.
Well, it'd be a good, like, it'd be a good contrast. That, like, you seem to be a very, like, bright smile. You've been smiling this whole time, so it's, like, very. Like,
terrible.
It'd be a good, awful. like one of those hard things that you see, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I love. Well, and I would love to do roles that maybe involved some, like, stage combat, mm-hmm. or something physical, something strong. I think that's a great challenge, and I love any opportunity that I have to portray a woman that way. I feel like I'm kind of like helping the cause.
Gotcha.
As opposed to, you know, the swooning and fainting into someone else's arms.
Gotcha. Which is
a lot of what happens in musical theater.
Well, yeah. We love melodrama.
Can't get enough of it.
Although, see, if we go back to the, you know, if we can convince people to start doing those, like, reverse casting West Side Stories, we can... I don't know if we're going to succeed.
See, now you planted the seed. Anybody out there?
You got to have some pull, though, because, like, to get the rights to do that would be insane.
Right, right.
So, then, what is something, like, now, since you've worked on several different things, and you, like, and you kind of look back, who is, what's a character that you love playing, but you would love to go back and do it differently?
Man, that's a good question.
Okay.
The first one that popped into my mind was Viola in Twelfth Night.
Okay.
Just because I did it in college, and I would just love to have another crack at it now, several years out, just having traveled and having learned how to, you know, survive in a place that's not your home. Mm-hmm. I think that... there's probably something that I could bring to it now.
A lot of people, I would just say, like, when I ask that question, Shakespeare's a very often answer. I know, like, Derek Jacobi, like, in that same question, he wants to go back, and we can't now, but he's just constantly said he was like, he would love to go back and do Richard II again, because he was like, even though he has this, like, one of these, like, all time brilliant performances, like, he's like, God, I didn't know what I was doing.
Right? And there's so much, there's so much to find. It's just endless.
So, what do you, on that note, what do you think, what would be something that you think you do well, like a strength, like, that you find in yourself when you do perform characters, something you can, like, you know that you do well? It's like, you're going into an audition room, you're like, man, I get this part down.
that's such a hard question to answer.
Not going full ballsy or anything, but, like, you know, just, like, what are the things, that, what is something that you do think that, like, you always bring with you, like, that you've seen, like, where you're like, okay, this is something that I've clearly been cast at several times, I do this well.
Oh, I guess, I sing high notes.
Okay. I can do that, so I'm very envious.
That's, like, the thing that people...
I'm fine.
What coffee?
I'm good.
The service here is great.
It is. They've been on top of my coffee habit right now.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that I get called for. It's like, oh, we need someone who sings high. Let's call it.
Okay.
But I think that it's become something that I actually had to work against, you know, to be like, actually, I do more than that.
Yeah.
So while that is, I guess that's one of the first things that I became known for.
Yeah. We'll flip the coin. What's the other side of it? What do you think something... what is something that you see that you continue... because we're always working on something. We always... you have to continue to acknowledge, wow, I don't do this well. I should get better at this. Like, what's something that you really do want to focus on, like, now, the, of, like, getting better at, like, or at least getting exposed more to?
Everything.
Everything? Well, I was going to ask, like, you mentioned stage combat. Like, you would really love to do that.
Yes.
Like, that would be, like, something...
stage combat is definitely one thing that I would love to explore more and learn more about. Physical comedy is really, really just amazing to me when it's done well. The virtuosity is just, I think there's nothing better. So I would love to learn more about that. I've done some Commedia dell'arte. I would love to push further and learn more about that and mask work. And I would love to travel again and study a little bit more about art and culture in different countries. Yes, this eating and talking thing is kind of challenging.
It does become a bit, yeah.
You're good at it.
You don't think about it. Like, you just keep going, and then you're like, oh, wait, I'm done.
So, yeah.
Well, all right. Continuing along those kind of lines of, like, flipping questions or whatever. Do you find, like, you love being in the performance mode more, or do you love being in the process?
It's weird that you should ask this. I was just thinking about it yesterday because somebody asked me if there's something else I could do, what would it be? And it might sound like a tired answer, but I would teach because the process is the part that really fulfills and fascinates me the most, I think. And so yeah, there's your answer.
Okay. Well, earlier in the interview, you also talked about, it seemed like you had a lot of kind of, not pivotal moments, but you did have a lot of teachers that you did end up, like most people do, we have those people who encourage us or whatever, so, I mean, would you say that those teachers that you had previously in your life probably contribute to that?
Undoubtedly, in a huge way. James Morisi was my first voice teacher. He was the person who believed in me and made me believe in myself. And Melody Racine, Ben Wagner, like I said, Mark Madama, all of my college professors, Gloria Logan, high school. And then, coming here, I found a lot of incredible teachers too. And they were friends and colleagues, but they were also just generous people who helped me and taught me. And if I start listing them, that will take up the next hour and a half.
Okay. So we're kind of getting towards the end here. We both finished our breakfasts, but who do you find yourself like idolizing? Who are people you still like when you think about like, man, I want to do what they do? Like, who are the people that you always saw, like maybe ahead of you? Like, I want to be, bleh, like Sean Connery or somebody. It's like, man, you know, if I could just do that guy or whatever. Like, do you have anyone like as far as like that idealistic person of like, man, I love what they do, I want to keep like working that, or is it different sort of divergent paths or what?
There are a lot of people. I really look up to and admire Mary Martello.
Okay.
I love her as a human being and as an artist. Just thinking of other performers that I want to be like. I think Geneviève Perrier, Krista Apple, Dan Hodge, Ben Dibble was really wonderful during Candide, and I continue to sort of idolize him ever since. Jen Childs. I want to be Jen.
Okay. It's funny you mentioned Krista. Krista was the last person I actually interviewed. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I interviewed him for Curios R&J. So.
Yeah. This is so hard. I mean, I could go on and on.
I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, you know, some people really do have, I mean, and you clearly do have some people. I just didn't know if there was always that one where it's like, man, Tim Curry. Oh, if I could be Tim Curry, I'd be happy.
I don't know. There aren't many celebrities that I feel that get that close to.
Yeah.
I really want to idolize. But I know that there are a lot of people who are out there doing a lot of humanitarian work with their fame. And I really admire those people.
So what do you, last couple like questions here, what do you find that you struggle with most, like during the process of like, what's the hardest thing for you to find whenever you're working towards something of like getting maybe over a certain hump? Like you talked about like you love finding the breadth of a character. Well, what's the one thing that does always, you're like, why does this never just pop in there? Like you have to struggle to find it.
Sometimes it's the language, I think. And finding the voice. That's actually, I'm hoping to spend next summer doing some intense study on voice, because even though it's sort of my livelihood in the center of what I do, it's also something that I feel like there's a lot more learning to happen there. And I sometimes end up getting really eager and manipulating my voice in a certain way because it's funny or because it's interesting, and then it ends up not being totally sustainable. And so finding like a true voice that I can use as the foundation for every project and then sort of layer on top of that, that's kind of the next step. That's something I'm looking forward to working on.
So we're going to get a little bit of James Lipton in here now. I always love getting towards these questions because there's always those certain cliche questions you never get around. Like, what's your favorite character? How do you find your people? But the one since you've been working, you've continued to work and you've done a lot of incredible and great things, and now you're up for the Haas Award. Like, what sort of advice would you have someone, maybe a beginning where you were 13 years ago? Like, if you were talking to someone who was just getting started, or a female coming in, or even just an actor, anyone coming in, what would you tell them, what would be your word of advice to them to kind of maybe give them a spark of confidence or anything like one of those lines? Just to let you know, this is what you'll be Pinterest for. When your picture is on a Pinterest page, this is the part they're listening for right now.
I always go back to this this poem by Rudyard Kipling called If. I don't have it memorized, yeah. But I will email it to you.
Well, there's a really big... It's funny that this is how I know this poem. There's a big poster, and I can't remember the painting that's on.
You're familiar with the poem?
Yes,
you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's this one line. Well, there are a lot of amazing lines in it, but one is, if you can deal with success and failure and treat both of those two imposters the same. And so I've tried to sort of live my life by that. My dad gave me that advice, and it's something I would pass on. Also, that you don't need anyone's permission to succeed, that you can do it.
Yeah.
And as cliche as it seems, trying to find what's unique about you that makes you different, and love that instead of try and hide it or fix it. And remember why you're doing it. I think that's the best thing that I get from teaching, is connecting to these young students who are, you know, wide-eyed and amazed by this art form and all the things that we do, and that really nourishes me and helps me remember why. And I think that if I'm ever struggling in a process, I can just ask myself, why am I really doing this? And that can help plug me back in. And then there are a couple of people in my life that that I can just sort of carry with me and connect to wherever I am, and just check in, and they can guide me. And if you have a person like that in your life, then I would say keep them close.
So I had a couple more questions, but that is too good of an ending to pass up. Like, I would prefer that to be the thing that we end on. So thank you very much, Liz. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I've absolutely loved talking with you this past hour. Everybody, thanks for listening. This is Brock Vickers with Rep Radio in this edition of Acting Out. And today I had with me
Liz Filios.
Liz, and also since that, let me know, you're working on stuff right now. What are you doing right now, so we can leave it on that note of like current projects? If somebody wants to go see you and see you in action and all of these beautiful things we've talked about put into place, how would they see you right now?
All right, the next thing I'm doing is playing Sudsy Squirrel. I had to do that.
Yeah, Squirrel.
Squirrel. She's a tough lady, and she'll be at the Panto. Cinderella at People's Light and Theatre Company. It opens November 20th and runs till January 21st, I believe.
All right. Thank you very much, Liz.
Want to help the Rep Radio Podcast Network? Here's how. Share the episodes with your friends, co-workers, patrons, and even enemies. Word of mouth is our best form of advertising. You can find us in the iTunes Store and our Vimeo and YouTube channels. You can leave a comment or send us a direct message on Twitter @rep_radio and like us on Facebook at Rep Radio or Represented Theater Company. Represented is a fiscally sponsored project of Fractured Atlas. If you would like to support us with a tax-deductible contribution, feel free to click the support link at repradio.org. Stay tuned. Rep Radio is on the air.